Right, so I'm here to talk to you about Aon and, in my view, desktop Linux done properly. Who the heck am I? Well, I work at SUSE. I'm a distribution engineer. Before that, I've done a bit of everything. I was a sysadmin, systems manager. I was in QE, did release engineering for a bit, including on Tumbleweed. I've been in the board. I've been chair of the board. Just, yeah, been around for ages. This is like my 14th year presenting at OSC. But yeah, I made this thing called Aon. I'm also not very good at looking at schedules, so I thought I was actually talking tomorrow, and tomorrow I was going to have a co-speaker. You might see him if you come with my little dog, Dobby, which would be his second OSC tomorrow. And yeah, destroyer of one EcoPlush. So, going to be talking about Aon. What is it? Why did I start it? What am I trying to do with it? I'm going to go into some detail about actually some of the kind of components under the hood, Flatpak, FlatHub, DistroBox. It's got a completely different installation routine than anything else in the OpenSUSE ecosystem, so I'm going to be talking about that. Reinstallation, full disk encryption, and what the heck's coming next. So, Aon, what is it? Why did I make it? Well, starting at the heart of it is I came to this realization some years ago now that traditional Linux, you know, like we have in Tumbleweed, like we have with Leap, is just not good enough in this day and age, in my view. You know, it's like a Swiss Army knife, right? You know, you've got an operating system that can do a little bit of everything. You've got a package for this, you've got a package for that. It can be your server, it can be your desktop, it can be your server and your desktop. At the same time, you know, all this stuff, super highly customizable. It's, you know, we all love that we can tinker and tune and play with it. But with that sort of power and customizability, you know, it introduces a whole bunch of extra risks of incompatibilities, bugs. You know, this thing, which was never designed to work with this thing, can both easily be installed on a Tumbleweed machine and explode in spectacularly wild and new, unexpected ways. And speaking as a packager, you know, and a release engineer, like you end up really having a hard time figuring out how to put these things together. You know, when you have a package that you're building and you know it is going to be used in this one case, in this one scenario, it's really quite easy to configure that software to be perfect for that one case and that one scenario. When you have to then worry about the 1,000 other ways it could potentially be installed and different desktop environments it could be used in, and different architectures and different kernels, you end up with a whole bunch of extra work to do, and potentially no one ever actually making use of all that extra work you're doing because you don't know if they've put it together in that weird combination that you spent your time thinking about. And thinking about it, I think most of us in this day and age actually know this. You know, when you think about servers in particular, you know, you don't see people making super complicated, do everything multi-purpose servers anymore. You know, you don't have a file server that's also your mouse server, that's also a web server. You know, every sensible sysadmin deploys single-purpose instances. They may do it on the cloud, they may do it in a VM, it may be some little Raspberry Pi in the corner, but the one thing they all have in common is it's pretty much just they're doing one job. And sysadmins these days spend an awful lot of time, you know, making sure that installation is as trim as it needs to be, doesn't have any extra bloat that it doesn't need to have, isn't running extra services that it doesn't need to run, because any service you have extra might be a reason for it to break someday. You also have a lot of sysadmins purposefully delaying or ignoring patching, because, you know, any change can potentially break a running system. And, you know, maybe not even patching it at all during the entire lifespan, just rip it out and replacing it instead of upgrading it. You know, generally, of course, there's a strong trend in the server world of, you know, automation over micromanagement. You know, don't SSH into the machine and mess around with the shell, but actually have some remote tool or have some automation on the system itself to take care of itself. And then, you know, when you've got enough hardware to be able to do it, having the luxury of being able to have, you know, two servers doing the same job, bit of redundancy, so if one fails, everything keeps on working. And so I think that is actually a model that should apply to everything in modern computing. You know, we should have operating systems that are designed to just work, to just do one job and do that one job well. you shouldn't need to be messing around with complicated policies, procedures, package management, figuring out exactly which packages you need to install to get things working. You know, it should, we should be building the OS to align with this optimal model, which people are already doing when it comes to building systems that just work. So the perfect Linux should be designed for single-purpose installations. You know, just have an OS that is designed to do just one job, with as few services on there as possible, therefore the fewest things possible to break. Having an update mechanism where, you know, you don't have to delay it or, you know, put it to one side to avoid risk. Having an update system that takes care of itself, never breaks the running system, easy to roll back, easy to self-heal if something goes wrong, easy to therefore, you know, do the whole thing at scale with hundreds or thousands of instances, and of course be ready to plug into any orchestration if you have it. And it shouldn't need manual maintenance. It should always be in a consistent or known state. You know, you want to know that it's working in a particular way. And it shouldn't need that additional orchestration. If you've got it, great, but it, you know, you shouldn't need to have three servers just to run one server. And in the server world, I would argue that perfect Linux already exists. You know, in the OpenSUSE space, we have MicroOS, and that's the only server you need, in my view. It fits this model perfectly. It does that just one job. You know, yes, it's based on Tumbleweed, so some people are worried about the impact of the rolling release, but you know, given that it is designed to be immutable, to automatically update, to automatically self-heal, you know, you're not going to see any issues even if they do occur with the code base. So, you know, why not just have it there, running its containers, running that one job, rebooting itself whenever? And then in the enterprise world, of course, we have SUSE Linux Enterprise Micro taking the same thing in the enterprise world, and Edge and all that fun stuff. So, like I said, yeah, fully automatic updates, all of this stuff, all baked into the whole thing. And, you know, I've been running MicroOS now for years, and I wanted to have the sort of that same story, just a dumb, you know, a dumb appliance that could do that one job in the background without me having to worry about it all the time. Then, you know, so I started messing around with ideas of like running a desktop on top of MicroOS. But I realized pretty quickly that, you know, desktops are surprisingly special compared to servers. You know, you're not going to have a redundant laptop lying around, most likely. You know, and if you do, you're not going to carry it to a conference. I've only got this one with me today. So you've got an argument, actually, that desktops need to be more reliable than even a server. You know, you can't pull out a backup one if it goes wrong. Any problem is immediately blocking you from doing, you know, your work in the way you wanted to. And, you know, it's got to look pretty, it's got to be easier to interact with, you know, it can't be, yeah, it's something that a human has to actually touch and play with, which, unlike a server these days, where it's something that, you know, you're trying to keep the human away from as much as possible. And because of that, I realized actually having MicroOS as its base, you know, technically is great, but when it comes to the sort of the configuration and everything else on top of it, it was trying to cram a square peg into a round hole. It just didn't really make any sense. So Aeon is taking the sort of concepts behind MicroOS from a technical level and then packaging it all up, focusing it, polishing it as a pure polished desktop experience, separate code base, separate images, all that kind of stuff. So it's reliable and predictable and immutable, just like regular MicroOS. It's opinionated, partly because I'm opinionated, but also because it helps with that concept of having that one job, having that one focus. So it's entirely GNOME only. There are other derivatives out there that do other stuff. In fact, most of the talks this morning are about stuff like this. But Aeon is, yeah, GNOME only, very much focused on a Chromebook-like experience. You know, just turn it on, it works. It's there. Image-based installation, therefore making sure that everybody in the community running Aeon has started at the same spot, which also then makes it really easy for us to talk about, yeah, health checking, automatic repair. Also makes my life way easier with bugs because I know everybody started from the same spot. Keeping the whole thing minimal but functional, so you know, not trying, having a trim base OS, but still making sure that everything is there for all your drivers, for gaming, development, printing, all of that working straight out of the box. So you shouldn't need to do any additional configuration to be able to get to work. To prove that point, I reinstalled this laptop yesterday, and this is the first time it's booted up since then. So, in my view, it's the best Linux desktop. Of course, I would say that because I made it, but it's not necessarily the prettiest. It's GNOME. It's simple. It's clean. You know, nice basic wallpaper, nice basic theming. Not doing anything too fancy. And because we've got an immutable base system, you know, it gets us thinking about actually what is the best design structure for handling things like the applications, right? You know, we've got on a server, it doesn't really matter if you've got a server that's doing just one job. It doesn't really matter if that one job is in a container or in an RPM. It's still just going to be sitting there in a data center doing its thing. When it comes to the desktop and your applications, you want to know where your applications are coming from. So with Aeon, all of the user-installed applications, graphical or terminal-based, are expected to be isolated from the base system. So in other words, you know, I'm taking care of the base OS, you're going somewhere else to get the applications you're using on a daily basis. Graphical applications should be Flatpaks coming from FlatHub, and then terminal applications or graphical applications that you can't get from FlatHub should come from DistroBox. In a pinch, if you really need to, or if you have like special weird hardware drivers or the like, you know, you can still install an RPM classically, but it's not recommended. I'd much rather, you know, if you find something you needed there, let me know about it, and we'll talk about putting it in the base system so everybody gets it too. So in detail, you've got these different layers on a typical Aeon system. At the bottom, you've got the base OS, just plain vanilla GNOME, no applications, really trimmed down, trimmed even more than the minimal base pattern that you get on Tumbleweed. On top of that, you've got Flatpaks from FlatHub. And on top of that, you've got DistroBox, which runs multiple distributions in different containers. And then you can therefore have whichever classical packages from whichever distro you want running on top. So, yeah, you know, if you're a Debian user, if you're an Ubuntu user, Aeon is like this weird, wonderful hybrid where you can get all the cool stuff from OpenSUSE keeping your system nice and stable and running, but you can still use whatever favorite Ubuntu applications you have. So, Flatpak and FlatHub. Flatpak is one of these new sort of universal packaging formats, like Snaps, like AppImage. But unlike Snap and AppImage, I'd argue, is the one most sensibly designed. It's built in the open, very community-friendly, none of this sort of hidden behind canonical walls, for every Linux distribution out there. Every application has a what they call a runtime in Flatpak terms, but in reality is really just like a little mini distro that is aligned to that stack where that graphical application comes from. So for example, all of the GNOME Flatpak apps all use the same GNOME runtime. All the KDE Flatpak apps all use the same KDE runtime. And those GNOME and KDE runtimes are maintained by GNOME and KDE upstream. So, you know, I would argue, when it comes to the desktop world, Flatpak is probably better aligned with the kind of utopian vision of how open source should work than even our traditional desktop stuff is, because we now have upstream taking care of their own packages, and they're maintaining it themselves. And when there's an issue, we go to them and we work with them rather than doing everything again in our distro world. So that's great. Of course, you know, we still have our distro underneath that thing. So, you know, there is a little bit of abstraction and sandboxing to, you know, be able to make sure that the OS stays nice and safe and secure while the application is running on top. So that's how it ends up looking, where, yeah, your operating system is at the bottom, where you've got FlatHub running with these portals, which are basically little functions that are letting you do things like access your home directory on the system. And then inside the Flatpak, there's a runtime that's shared between all the applications that are similar, and then the application itself just comes along with its code and any library it needs. And FlatHub is really the number one, not the only, but the number one app store for FlatHubs. You know, it's vendor neutral, it's distribution neutral. Thousands of applications are there, lots of open source stuff, also lots of not open source stuff now. So, you know, Minecraft, VS Code, MS Teams, all there as well. Also, given this, you know, when you think of it in an OpenSUSE space, you know, because of the way that they're packaging things and the fact that they're not releasing an entire system, the scope for them to be able to redistribute codecs in the alongside the applications is actually way less risky than if we had to do it. So all of these applications on FlatHub have things like media codecs baked and bundled into them. So that's like one huge pain that OpenSUSE normally has to deal with that FlatHub take care of for us entirely. And increasingly, more and more Flatpaks are, like the runtimes, actually sort of verified, maintained by upstream or by people designated by upstreams. So like the Firefox on Aeon, you know, isn't some random guy packaging it up and then making it a Flatpak. The Firefox on Aeon is Mozilla making that and maintaining that and updating it every time there's a security issue. And yeah, inside GNOME, you have GNOME software, so you get a nice, pretty graphical way of deploying it, including information like at the bottom, where there, you know, when you install an application, gives you an indication of what holes there may be in that sandbox. So, for example, the Maps application here needs to be able to access the network. Therefore, it tells you that it's going to have to access the network. DistroBox, that's a tool inspired by various tools that all share the name Toolbox in some way or another that you might have already seen or come across with MicroS or Fedora. In those cases, on those servery distros, you know, the Toolbox is typically a way of giving you a read-write environment on a read-only server, just so you can do like debugging and bug fixing and whatever. DistroBox sort of has really taken that and gone to like the nth degree of like, okay, you know, the world's going more and more immutable. We now have all these immutable desktops, but people still want to have a fully functioning shell environment to be able to do their stuff in. So DistroBox makes that as nice and simple and user-friendly as possible. So in fact, on my system, I don't use my local shell at all. Everything is a DistroBox. So it's based on containers, so any distribution you want can be in your distro box. It tightly integrates in with the host OS, so you know it accesses your home directory, can access your USB storage, external storage, audio, graphical stuff. Like it's not really got any sort of security sandboxing in the same way Flatpak does, but that's kind of great for this because you want to just be using it as a different way of getting applications on your system. Gives you, like I say, a read-write environment on your immutable system. And Aeon actually has a highly optimized Tumbleweed-based DistroBox for minimal startup times. So it already has all of the DistroBox modifications and tweaks and tunings. So you run DistroBox on Aeon, and it starts up like that pretty quickly. So you don't need, if you do try Aeon and you install it and you find, you know, something you desperately want is missing, like, you know, I'm a VI guy, so, you know, Aeon has VI in the base OS and nothing else, and you want to run Nano, you know, if you load up the local shell on Aeon and run Nano, it's going to say that it's not found, and then if you try and install it with Zipper, it's going to tell you not to do it. But if you just run DistroBox, you're going to end up in a Tumbleweed environment anyway, by default, which is nice. And then you can just zip it in Nano, and 10 seconds later or so, you end up with Nano in a shell in there. Nice, simple, no mess, no fuss. It's also wonderful as a developer environment. You know, this is like the best thing since sliced bread for my work. Because you know you're going to be messing around at some point, packaging or working on weird and wonderful stacks, you know, Python, Ruby, whatever. And with DistroBox, you can just spin up another container for that weird stack, and have that there sitting there in the background with whatever dirty little hacks and whatever horrific messes you have to do to get your Python environment working. And you can build up as many of these as you want. So you can have one DistroBox for Python development, one for Ruby, one for whatever. You know, have Tumbleweed, Leap, Slee, all on the same Aeon machine, all at the same time, all just in different shell windows, all without needing to mess around with VMs. And like I said earlier, like, you know, in my case, that's actually what I now use as my default shell. You know, I have a default shell that is a distro box. I have another key combination which fires up my packaging distro box, and that covers almost everything I have to do when I'm working with OBS. And that's it. I basically never need to touch the local shell on this machine. Oh, and yes, that packaging container that I use is now available for everybody. So it's everything you need for dealing with OBS, Git, the build service, all the build service plugins, if you're a release manager, all the staging stuff, all there, and you can just add that container into your DistroBox config and away you go. But like I mentioned in passing earlier, you know, DistroBox in Aeon is sort of the recommended way of dealing with terminal applications, but it's also actually really good for graphical applications when you can't get something out of Flatpak. So, you know, let's take this example here of MPV, which doesn't have a Flatpak. You can just fire up a DistroBox, install it with Zipper in. Once it's installed, run DistroBox export, and what that basically does is looks for the desktop shortcut that is inside your DistroBox, makes a copy of it and modifies it so it can then appear in your home directory, so it'll appear in your menu in your desktop. So every time you click on that shortcut, it's going to fire up the DistroBox and load up MPV and go into work just like it would have if you had actually installed it on your base OS. So really nice way of getting everything you need, even if you can't get it working from a flat pack. And that does mean you can do weird and wonderful stuff, like running a whole bunch of weird Ubuntu and Fedora stuff, if you feel like it. Installation on Aeon is fun and different. We've got all this new stuff with a gamma, which is great and awesome, but with Aeon, I really wanted to have something which is entirely image-based, starting with this idea of everybody starting from the same spot all the time. And we have Kiwi, and I love Kiwi, especially when it comes to the self-installer, which I've done an awful lot of work with in the past. But I wanted something a little bit simpler, a little bit more lightweight, and also a little bit more modern in just looking at this fresh, we were talking about it to someone yesterday too, why do we still have ISOs that are 4.2 gig? Because none of us ever uses a DVD drive in our machines anymore. Taking the opportunity to kind of review all of those old assumptions that we've tied in, and actually, if I was building this fresh, and I was building this fresh, what should an installer look like that's deploying an image? So it's inspired by the self-installer, borrowed a couple of function names and the like, but pretty much all written from scratch, and has a really simple installation workflow. It boots up off a USB stick, it finds the storage devices on your system. If you have more than one disk, it offers which one, and then it's going to wipe that disk and put its image over the top. But it's also entirely modular, so if you want to do weird and wonderful stuff in addition before and after that, Tick can do some really weird and wonderful stuff, and with Aeon, we've actually got some of that in the installer now. But at its heart, this is like the entire Tick GUI. You plug it in, it boots up, it asks you yes, no, that's it, done. Super simple. With Aeon, then, after it's done that deployment, Aeon will automatically boot. If you're using Ignition or Combustion, that will run from the USB stick where Tick is as well and automatically execute. And then if not, then GNOME Initial Setup turns up and basically gives you a chance to set up your users, your Wi-Fi, all of that stuff on first boot that, in a traditional installer, you will be doing that in the installer, but we don't have that with Tick. We would just deploy the image and then do it all on first boot. And then when you log in, you get all the default applications for FlatHub, or you can modify them. And if you're a non-English speaker, we also now fix the language at that point based on the language you picked in GNOME Initial Setup, so the locale gets changed to the correct locale and all of that stuff. So yeah, GNOME initial setup, nice and simple. Offers you the language, offers you the keyboard layout. Pick which country you're in. Put in your name, put in a password, and then pick which software you install. So mentioned with Tick that, you know, the basics are really simple. That's it, pretty much. But you've got this modular options of being able to do, you know, cool and wonderful stuff before and after. And because with Tick we're assuming that it's running off a USB stick, and because it's 2025 and we're not using an ISO file, that USB stick doesn't have to be read-only. So if you give your Tick installer a big chunky USB stick, like 256 gig or whatever, what Tick will actually do is, when you've picked your disk that you're about to annihilate with your Aeon installation, it will detect if you have an existing installation. It's looking for Leap, it's looking for Tumbleweed, it's looking for previous Aeon installations, anything sort of BTRFS layout, it'll find it and look for it. And it'll be looking for specifically for the BTRFS home subvolume that we use by default. And if it then finds it, it'll give you a prompt saying, you know, previous installation detected, and your Tick installation will actually offer to back up that entire system that it is just about to wipe out. So all of the home data, all the flatpaks and distro boxes, any usernames and passwords and like sub-UID and GID stuff for containers, your Wi-Fi, your VPN config, your Bluetooth pairings, your fingerprints for fprint, because I've got a fingerprint scanner here, so I wanted that, and all of your locale and time zone information. And all of that gets backed up to the USB stick before the installation of Aeon happens. Then, when the installation's happened, all of that stuff gets installed again, and you don't have to bother going through that first boot routine that I just described. So, really nice, simple way of actually nuking and paving your entire machine, but actually, practically speaking, pretty much getting back to exactly where you were after you've just wiped the machine. Sort of extreme power washing, extreme factory reset, because you are wiping everything in the process, but you also then end up with this nice USB stick that also has a backup of everything you have on it, which you can then put in another laptop and clone it and keep on doing it, which is a fun side effect. I didn't think about that when I was designing it, but it happens and it works. So, yeah, you get the prompt. It backs everything up. This is all using BTRFS send and receive, so it's pretty damn speedy when it does it. And then after the installation, it restores it. Simple, boring. Kind of what I'm trying to do with Aeon as much as possible. But one thing that definitely isn't boring is full disk encryption. So when I last talked about this last year, this was just before we'd done full disk encryption, because, July 2024 is when I finally got it out the door. We had Aeon reaching release candidate 3, and the way FDE works on Aeon is we have this sort of this concept of two modes. I really kind of only wanted to do the default mode, where it's TPM-backed, automatic unlock, so it's using the TPM in your laptop to basically verify is your OS the OS that it should be, and if it is, unlocking the hard disk. But unfortunately, kind of, I came to the realization that, you know, as wonderful as modern laptops are, and you know, people have had TPMs in their laptops now for like 5-6 years, there's still a whole bunch out there that don't actually have a TPM that is sufficiently good enough to do this properly. So reluctantly, we also have the fallback mode where you have to put in a passphrase during the installation. One day maybe I will get rid of that and we'll just have the default mode. All this is deployed using Tick. We had to modify a few things under the hood, so instead of deploying an image via DD, we're now using systemd repart. But that's just to make things fancier and easier when it comes to dumping the image, dumping the blocks, and then pairing all of this stuff up with the TPM. And then we use sdbootutil to sort out the TPM measurements. And we like it so much in Aeon that in Aeon, FDE is 100% utterly mandatory. This is not an option. You know, every Aeon installation is encrypted and is full disk encryption for a whole bunch of reasons. Obviously, the first one, your data is important. But I'd argue, actually, also the integrity of the operating system is even more important. You know, we really want to make sure that your system hasn't been altered, it hasn't been modified, especially in the world of UEFI, where you know you're booting everything from an unencrypted FAT partition at the beginning of your disk. You know, we really want to make sure that everything there is exactly what we put there and no one else has modified it. It's another reason why we don't support dual boot with Windows. So then things that in a typical Linux world you kind of can't trust as much as you might want to, you know, like your typical PAM authentication password. You know, you can't really be sure that that's actually really protecting anything, because if anybody ever gets access to your laptop, they can just change their command line on booting and boot into bin bash, and you know, you never get prompted to log in at all. Well, with Aeon, you can't do that. You can't modify the command line because the command line is stored and measured as into the TPM. So therefore, you know that you are booting not just the operating system the way that we delivered it, but also the configuration of the operating system the way we delivered it. Which is, yeah, nice. So it means, you know, your usual login password is suddenly important and useful and more beneficial. This actually means also, like, Secure Boot and all of Microsoft's signing of stuff is actually, like, totally optional on Aeon. If you want to use it, great. But in default mode, not at all. Apart from with fallback mode, because, you know, there, you're not using the TPM. So, you know, it's nice to have some kind of detection that, you know, you're booting, well, maybe not exactly what we delivered, but at least something that was signed by Microsoft. But obviously, if we're doing encryption by default, and I'm trying to appeal to everybody that I can and want to make it as simple as possible, even if, regardless if you're using default mode or fallback mode, as part of the installation, you get this nice screen where we generate a recovery key for the purposes of you know, giving you an extra a way of fixing your system or getting into your system, you know, if the TPM breaks, if the pairing goes wrong, you know, if you move the disk from one laptop to another, something like that. It's a bit of a long string. I'm thinking of making it shorter, but doesn't really matter because you've got this nice QR code, so you can just save it somewhere nice and secure, like on my phone, so you can bring it out the few times you need it. So that's where Aeon is today. What's next? Well, there's really only one thing for Aeon to be, in my view, considered like a proper release, perfect for everybody to use distro, and that's nothing technical. Like, we've been feature complete now. You know, I did that in July. Pretty much was happy with it after August. So we've been feature complete for almost a year now. We really just need open QA tests. Most of my time with Aeon lately has just been dealing with small annoying paper cuts that keep on slipping in because we don't have open QA tests. So we're not, you know, not getting everything tested as part of the regular tumbleweed release process. So yeah, that's basically it. So thank you. But it's not going to be where we stop. Like, so we've got a whole bunch of other crazy ideas in the project that I and others are working on. That, you know, well, some of this may slip in before we get around to finishing the open QA tests. Some of it, obviously, we can wait till after release. So there's a lot of work going on in our ecosystem around OpenSUSE and SUSE anyway, with the idea of UKI supports, unified kernel images. You know, they would fit in so well with all the stuff we're doing with Aeon. So you know, we're really keen on looking at that. You know, replacing what we have in the UEFI partition with the UKIs already. It's one of the reasons why the UEFI partition on Aeon is 4 gig big. I made it way bigger than I need to be. So whatever that's going on with the UKI stuff, it'll fit. Thinking of removing the TTY consoles because it's like the only reason why you see a flicker sometimes on booting. And then even though we've got that really cool wiping reinstalling from the USB stick, there's a whole bunch of really fun stuff that I want to play around with of improving the self-healing, like having Aeon automatically look what RPMs are installed, what RPMs would be installed if you were installing from fresh, and then, you know, cleaning itself up that way, and while doing so, not messing with your config and etc. Or maybe even having like an in-place factory reset, because I've been doing a lot of fun experimentation of, instead of using block images, using OCI images with tick, Which, yeah, just awesome. Make way easier to make the image, way easier to deploy it. Still looks like exactly the same on the machine, but if we have that OCI image made for the installer, that also means I can have that same OCI image and then pull that down to your machine and use it for repairing your machine without touching your data. So really the last thing I wanted to say is, you know, like I said, the one thing that's left is OpenQA. And we really would like some help from the community with that one. And everyone asks, well, like, Aeon's all based on Tumbleweed stuff, so like, why not use the Tumbleweed tests? Well, all that stuff I talked about with the installation and the first boot and FDE, you know, that's unique to Aeon. There's no SUSE or OpenSUSE distro doing any of that, so there's no OpenQA tests that do any of that. So, you know, it's not the most complicated installation routine, you know, it's pretty much one or two clicks. But we need to have somebody write those tests. Also, there is potentially a slight issue of reusing some of the Tumbleweed tests, because Aeon is a lot user-friendlier when it comes to things like security and privilege escalation. You know, your sudo policy in Aeon is you don't have a root password, you're using your password for your user account to give yourself root, all that fun stuff. I think that problem's probably actually going away, because I believe we're doing some of that stuff in SLE 16 soon. So, you know, I guess those tests are going to be written in that way anyway. But this really like isn't a massive pile that should be scary to volunteers, you know, newcomers, first one, you know. Though that installation routine is probably a really good example for a good first test writer. And then when it comes to reusing all the existing stuff, you know, Aeon being bloat-free means there's a heck of a lot less to test. You know, most of the tests we could reuse from Tumbleweed, it's just a case of, you know, not using all of them, because there's way more tests for way more stuff in Tumbleweed GNOME that make no sense for Aeon, because we don't install any of that stuff. So there's, yeah, most of it's really just going to be a case of adding some install tests and then trimming out a whole bunch of GNOME tests that we don't need. And that's it. I think I left a bit of time for questions. If there is any, Rick.
Oh, thank you. So first of all, thank you so much for Aeon. It's as you know, I've installed it and used it in various settings. So in the many years that I have tried to inspire people to switch from Windows to Linux, there's always some freaking stupid Windows application, which is like stupidly mission critical, and they won't consider alternatives. It seems to me that Aeon, like, we could slip in some kind of like KVM thing or something in there to, like, because like you have two paths, you have Flatpak and yeah. DistroBox, and I'm wondering if we could slip in another channel, which is like the Windows app channel.
You could totally do that from an architectural perspective. Yeah, it's ripe for that. A quick and dirty way to start, I guess, would be someone could probably make a rather nice tuned-up Wine distro box. Wine, doesn't run every Windows application, but it would be a place to start until the other layer exists. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, there's... Yeah, but adding a third layer to the option for Windows, yeah, no problem. Yeah. Sorry, next question.
Yeah, I'm wondering a bit about the update policy for Aeon, because it seems you have three different sources for your software in Aeon, so you would have to update from three different sources. And is this automatized in some way? And could you expand on that?
Yeah, sure. So the reason I didn't mention it is because users shouldn't have to worry about it. That's, you know, so all of the update mechanisms for all those different sources for software are all automated. So the OS automatically updates itself, and you get a notification about rebooting whenever you feel like it. So it's not like MicroOS where it auto-reboots. You reboot when you want. DistroBox automatically updates itself. Flatpaks automatically update themselves. So yeah, you shouldn't ever have to worry about it, but if you do, yeah, you've got three places to look.
All right, thanks.
So thank you very much for the presentation. I have a little bit like short-sighted view, like from the independent consulting. In terms of deployment, NetBoot working with Aeon, right?
I've got to admit, I've never tried to do a NetBoot with the Tick installer, but it should work. Yeah.
And what kind of tool you would recommend if I like have to deploy locally in some local network, many workstations?
In theory, you should be able to run Tick. You should be able to run Tick from a NetBoot.
And the last question, you have mentioned SUSE Linux Enterprise Micro.
Yes.
I can build Aeon on that base.
No, SUSE Linux Enterprise Micro is a server operating system. I don't think there's any plans on doing a commercial offering for Aeon on top of anything.
So basically it runs on the micro OS.
Aeon is technically a separate thing now, because I didn't want to make things too complicated with micro OS having to be, you know, working for servers and for desktops. So Aeon is its own thing. It's not micro OS with a desktop. It's Aeon.
So basically, I can pick any compatible distro for Aeon.
You can, in your distro box, you can put whatever you want.
Okay.
In your distro box, yeah. You can put what you want in there.
That was actually what I wanted to
Sorry,
know.
Misunderstood.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for your talk. It was interesting as usual. The question is, you mentioned OpenQA tests and this fires the question about platforms. So Aeon is x86 only or ARM is supported?
So Aeon is x86 only, UEFI only, TPM recommended, and I have no plans on changing that anytime soon. So if I'm open to the possibility of an ARM build, but it would have to at least do UEFI and at least have a TPM. And I can't find any ARM hardware that does that. So, you know, I'm not going to build a version of Aeon that just does fallback mode. So, yeah, that's the moment. Intel only. Simple. Light. Yeah.
Thank you.
There we go.
One of the things that you talked about quite a bit is the ability to do strong customizations around not only the distro box, but also just the distribution as a whole, right? So you have a very opinionated model. However, there's an ecosystem that built around that Emacs user over here, right?
Yeah.
So I want to see more about where this community is getting together and how that conversation is opening up.
So, I'll be honest. You're not the first person to ask this question, right? Because as soon as you start talking about immutable stuff, you know, people look at the existing stuff out there, and you know, there's projects like Universal Blue where, you know, there's this whole ecosystem of derivatives, and like their whole story with Immutable is very much, you know, you have this image and then you can make a whole bunch of flavors of the image. I personally utterly hate that model. You know, I don't object to people taking Aeon and making derivatives, because hey, you've got two talks about this after this one. But I'm not into this for building an ecosystem of flavors. I think the best way of doing the best desktop is doing the best desktop, focusing on that one thing. And so I'm not really that keen on focusing Aeon on you know, having people building their own custom images and their own derivatives. And like, I want Aeon to be Aeon, and if you want to take Aeon in typical open source fashion and make your own thing from it, cool, fine, I'll help you do your thing. But I want to really keep Aeon's story clean, crisp, focused on that one thing. I know that's a different model from what a lot of other people are doing, but that's what I think is the best way, actually, both for Aeon and for those other projects too. Like, they've got to stand a little bit on their own feet more, but yeah, that's how we're doing it. So yeah, really quick, because I'm technically out of time, but yeah.
Okay, we live in a world where companies are trying to flee away from Windows 11. macOS new version has a lot of enterprise-y features.
Yep.
Everybody's trying to feed on that. For a Linux enterprise desktop, I see a problem on fleet management, because that's what they have.
Yeah.
Do you see anything for Aeon on remote fleet management for I don't know, a company with 10,000 desktops?
For fleet management, I don't. I'm not really looking at that myself. Obviously, if Aeon ever goes in the desktop world, like that's the first question. The easy bit, though, I guess, is with that whole immutable model of like we have with MicroOS. You know, we know how fleet management works in MicroOS. It shouldn't be that hard to translate that across. You know, all of the OS stuff is going to be, you know, config in etc, binaries in USR, USR being read-only, like all that stuff's fine. So really, it only gets a question, I think, of with fleet management with something like Aeon is like, how much do you want that fleet management to mess with someone's home directory? And that's, some customers will like that idea, some customers won't. So sorry, I'm really out of time. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.